Law Enforcement Public Safety Committee to order. We're going to start off with approval of the October 3rd meeting minutes. I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes as read.
Moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the minutes are accepted. We're going to start with budget review of the various departments. Nancy, if you wouldn't mind beginning.
Sure. So our department is made up of several different divisions, and so I just wanted to start out by mentioning that we have probation, Stop DWI, the Crime Victims Assistance Program, Community Service, which in the budget is listed as Rehabilitation Services Work Release, Pretrial Release, and Raise the Age. I was told that you mainly wanted to hear about what changes we have from last year, so I'm going to talk about three particular areas, which is in the Crime Victims Assistance Program, Raise the Age, and Pretrial Due to Bail Reform.
Mm-hmm.
So, Crime Victims Assistance Program reached its 40th year in existence this year, and it is primarily grant-funded. This year, we got a very large competitive grant. We have been grant-funded for 40 years, but we were able to expand. That grant was approved by the October legislature, but it does impact the 2020 budget with new positions. It increased our previous grant by $162,000. We're going to be adding a crime victim counselor educator, a part-time Spanish-speaking crime victim assistant, and then a dedicated supervisor to that unit. And we're going to expand into working with victims of trafficking, additional domestic violence services, and supporting people who choose to participate in restorative justice practices. Any other questions on the crime victims, or should I move on to the next?
Does anybody have any questions?
No. Okay.
Right along.
So, Raise the Age. We had a financial application with the state, which has taken a very long time to get approved, but just got approved recently, and based on their instructions, we moved the Youth and Family Engagement Coordinator and the Assistant Youth and Family Engagement Coordinator from the DSS budget to the probation budget, based on their requirements, essentially. We got approval of the plan on October 1st, and they are going to be reimbursing us 100% for those positions, as well as the probation officers and a supervisor in their budget. It also includes, and this goes back to 2018, reimbursement for programming for 180, the AMP program out of the Center for Creative Education, and mental health services that we do 3 hours a week on site and get psychological evaluations through Access Supports for Living. The numbers for Raise the Age were lower in the first year than we expected. They have suddenly, in the first month of the 17-year-olds, started ramping up and are more what we had envisioned to begin with. We also did a lot of training of police departments, and we think that's having an impact. We're doing programming at the center, mindfulness, anger management. Office of Employment and Training does at least one per month program on the second Tuesday of the month for 16 to 24-year-olds. We have a photography program going on now, and we also do a monthly event that varies. The topics vary month to month. Any questions on the racing?
Yeah, Heidi, first. No, you first.
I'm just curious, how much state money came in for programming?
So, for our department, it's, I want to say 650,000, but total
665.
Thank you.
And you're utilizing some of those monies for the programs that you spoke about?
Yes. So the idea is that the state will reimburse us for everything. It's expenditure-based, so if we provide staff or a service, they will reimburse us for not just the 16, 17-year-old Raise the Age youth, but any juvenile delinquent. We applied for what they call gap funding to allow us to offer the services to the under 16 JDs as well, because it didn't seem fair that if you're 15, you can't have the service, and 16 you can. So they approved us as written for everything we put in all those programs.
Just Heidi has a follow-up, and then Lynn.
Did we not allocate a county money last year to programs to raise the age as well? And what amount was that? And was that money utilized?
It was $100,000. It's in the legislative budget.
That was for restorative
justice. That was restorative justice.
For adult restorative
justice. Okay, yeah. Totally different.
Well,
that's what
I understand.
That's what the sponsor said.
It was the intention. I don't think that was. But nothing regardless.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm thinking it was.
Right.
I'm thinking it was raise the age. It was restorative justice. Same building. Different.
So, but let me add to that, because I think that the county did allocate funds in Raise the Age, not knowing if the state was going to approve our plan. So there was money dedicated to those services, but our plan was in, and we were hopeful we would get reimbursed, and now we've been told we will be.
Great. Thank you
Lynn?
So much.
And what's your year-to-date? Do you have a year-to-date on revenues that Raise the Age has brought in? Is it close to what was budgeted?
So the contract with the state is not complete. We just found out October 1st. They have not given us the mechanism in which to submit our billing yet.
Okay.
So we have not brought in anything because our contract
because we're not showing anything. So I was just curious.
And you'll get that.
But
when
we'll go back. I mean, we are going to be
will.
Able to go back retroactively and bill on the staff and the services we've provided.
I just had a question. You know, you had said that the Raise the Age numbers weren't as many as you expected with the 16-year-olds, but you're about where you thought you'd be when the 17-year-olds came in. Does that mean that the 17-year-olds brought you up to the total number that you expected for the second year? Or?
No, and that just started October 1st.
Yeah.
So we had anticipated about 100 cases, and we were, you know, averaging 100 with the 16, 100 with the 17.
Yep.
In the first year of 16-year-olds, we only got 18 cases,
yep.
Nowhere near what we had anticipated. And there was some expectation that there'd be a slowdown just based on training and startup and all that. So we did a big push starting. We had done training throughout the year and prior to the law. But when we just said, we've got to do something more because these kids are out there.
Yeah.
And where are they?
Right.
And we also were hearing that there were police agencies charging with violation behavior, like disorderly conduct or harassment, because that goes to criminal court.
Right.
Instead of getting a family court appearance ticket. So we decided to do some more training. So we did another series of training. We trained KPD. I believe they've done Woodstock, they're doing Rosendale. We did one training that was open to every department. So as part of the training, I think what immediately happened was we started seeing more appearance tickets come in. So in the last 2 weeks, we got 6 appearance tickets in 2 weeks, and but only 3 of those were Raise the Age, but still that volume is much greater than what we have been seeing. So we're expecting that with some of this training and experience, the numbers will start creeping up.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other questions on that division?
Okay, and then the last part I wanted to talk about was pretrial release and bail reform.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the cases that currently have bail set to ensure their return to court are going to be released starting January 1st with no bail at all. And as new arrests occur, depending on the type of the offense, the defendants are going to get released with a court appearance and not be going to the jail. The sheriff and I have been in contact about numbers and trying to keep an eye on what the numbers are doing. The numbers are already going down. Some of the judges are practicing bail reform and doing some of this already. Our plan is to add one probation assistant, a Spanish-speaking probation assistant, but to watch the numbers come January 1 and add that person when we start to see movement. Initially, we expect a reduction, and then gradually it would build up again. the rules about when the courts can set bail or put people on pretrial are that they have to have some missed court appearances before they can do that. If that then happens, we'll get pretrial cases. If they're still having problems, they may get electronic monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, at this point, hoping with the reduced number in jail, so we don't have to go interview people in jail as many, we can manage some of the increase. Then we'll add a position when we get the additional increase, and then we just put a slight increase of $2,000 for additional electronic monitoring. We can only manage appropriately about 20 EM cases, and we run about 16 now. So if we get more than that, we just can't handle that volume. It is very difficult. It's calls all hours of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a couple of plans in place to deal with that as well, but we're hoping to just keep those to the minimum.
Tracy?
Is the concern in terms of the volume that you can handle, is that based on personnel capacity?
Somewhat. The way we handle it is an on-call rotation, so probation officers volunteer, and the rotation is done for a year, and it could be 12 officers, and they each have a week, and then after 12 weeks, the next one goes on, and it goes through the whole rotation.
A week where they're on-call 24 hours?
Yes. So what happens is when we start going over 20 and they're getting called in the middle of the night and they're tired and mm-hmm. they come to work the next day and they've been up all night or they've worked Saturday and Sunday because they got calls, it, you know, takes a lot out of them. So that's when we start to see that it's not very easily managed when the numbers get higher. So we look to, who do we have on that could maybe come off? How many people have been on a long time?
Right. A week seems like a long time to be on 24/7. I mean, it's fine if you're not getting any calls, but many calls, but...
And it varies.
Yeah.
So, and it varies by geography, partly because if we're using... We have three different kinds of technology. Some are using cellular, some are using GPS combination, some are using phone lines, but depending on what we're using... If they're in a location where GPS is a problem, then you're getting calls. If they have bad cell service, which we know in this county, there's pockets that don't. So we could get a whole bunch of people in some area of Kerhonkson, and the people are getting woken up all night long. And then we'll figure out, okay, well, this is this situation, and we'll decide whether we need to change how we respond to it. But our initial goal, and the courts have always been very responsive to us with this, we only have the spots we have, the slots. So they're pretty good about understanding that sometimes we can't take a case or we can't take it right away. We don't have equipment on hand. We have to order it, that kind of stuff. So
can I ask two follow-on questions?
Of course.
So you said $2,000 additional dollars for the additional monitoring. In terms of equipment, does that get you anything?
So the price varies from four something to eight something, depending on a day, depending on what we're using. We could be using an ankle monitor and an alcohol monitor. We could use a GPS. GPS is more expensive than the basic house arrest. So it's just adding to the budget to allow more days.
A little flexibility. And then the other question is, in terms of, when you talk about people missing, with bail reform, people missing their court dates and then finding themselves back in the system, do we have a plan in place to help people to make their dates, or do we have something?
So that is part of the legislation, and the Office of Court Administration is, my understanding from the courts, is they are being given a system that's kind of like the doctor's appointment, mm-hmm. where when you choose how you want to be alerted, by phone, by text, by email, whatever it is, mail, that the courts have a mechanism to actually do that. So they're going to be doing the notices. If they get put on pretrial, they don't necessarily have to go back to jail to... get pretrial. They could be at court, have missed an appointment or a court appearance, and then the court put them on pretrial. We have the ability, if the things that are going on in their lives affect their appearance in court, which sometimes substance abuse, they don't know, you know, their housing is at issue, they don't have means, then if we're working with them pre-trial, we have access to resources to help make sure they get to court.
Are we considering doing anything beyond what the Office of Court Administration is doing? I mean, it concerns me. Okay.
We are in the public defender's budget.
Okay.
And so probation isn't, but
okay,
everybody
that's great, because of the idea of a letter coming.
It was actually installed this morning. So we have a, hi everybody, Andy Kossover. We installed this morning in our case management software an additional program that is a notification system for all of our clients, not all clients, but all our clients, and it sort of mirrors what OCA is doing, which is our clients will instruct us text or email, and it automatically gives them notice, a reminder a week before, 3 days before, a day before, just like Mr. Schmidt said, a doctor's appointment, a dentist appointment, your haircut,
yeah.
It reminds you of your, and that, the studies have shown that it's like significantly reduces non-appearances. You know, a lot of court appearances, not to digress, but isn't because they're absconding. It's because they just...
They forgot,
they child care, whatever it is. But when they get these notifications, people make their court appearances.
And will you be tracking success with that? Will you be keeping statistics on...
We haven't...
We should.
It only got installed this morning.
We should keep it to budget because we have a short period of time here.
But
so.
Yeah, that's a good idea to see, see if we can do that.
So that's all I had in terms of significant changes to our budget. Otherwise, it's pretty much...
Does anybody have any further questions for the probation director? Heidi? Oh, it looked like you were leaning forward, so I wasn't sure.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Nancy.
Now we're going to move on, if you don't mind, Sheriff, if we could move on to the DA and the public defender, because they're going to have some synergies between their budgets, I think, so... Holly, we'll start with you.
Excuse me. So the two requests I asked for in the budget, one was granted, one was not. The first request was for two additional positions. I asked for two paralegal positions as a result of the new justice reform bills. I hope that's enough. But I've tried to keep that request low. I know that many of the offices around the state have asked for considerably more personnel. It's an issue in Albany right now. They're talking about, you know, the cost of all these bills and such. But my goal was to try and do some training beforehand, which we have been involved in. And I'm hoping that the paralegals will be able to assist the local police agencies in getting... compiling the information that we are going to be turning over to the defense. The second request I asked for were for some raises for their, I don't want to call them newer hires, because some of them have been there for 5 or 6 years, but for the less salaried positions that I have in the office. And this is always, I've been doing this for a number of years, and it's always an awkward situation. I don't know how I present an argument to you without comparing other agencies. I mean, I just don't know how I can do that. But I just want to start out by saying that it is not my goal to focus on any other agency in the county. And it's certainly not my goal to try and dissuade you from giving increases in salaries to other county employees. My goal is only to try and point out that there have been some increases in some departments and no increases in the DA's office, and I think that presents a poor business model. And in order to try and justify the request that I have, my thought was to highlight some of the other increases that have been recommended by the executive. And so I don't know how else I can say that. My general position has been for 12 years that just about every lawyer in this county is underpaid. So I hope no one misunderstands my point here. I'm not trying to say that people shouldn't receive increases. It's just the opposite. So, The I asked for six for raises for six people. These are my newer hires. The salaries start at about $60,000 and go up to about $64,000. And these are for people, depending on how much information. Let me just present to you, and then if you have questions about who they are, what they do, I can talk about that. But these are people who've been with the county for 4 or 5 years. They're felony trial attorneys. One of them has handled a murder case and is doing another murder case. He's making entry level salary, and we're going to lose him, which is an issue. All right. So if you look at the other attorneys in the county, there's a county exec, one county exec that had a 30% increase in their salary, which is, I guess that's what you can do when you control the budget. That's good. But anyway, so the county attorney's office has six lawyers. Three of them got raises, one a 5% raise, one a 12% raise, one an 11% raise. None of those salaries seem to be high to me, but I'm just saying that, in the county's attorney's office, there are three individuals that got the kind of raises that I'm seeking for my staff. And when I spoke with Mark about the raises, the gist of the discussion, I don't know if he's here and he can certainly answer for the county exec, but the pushback I had is, well, we're doing a study, personnel study, and we're not going to give any particular raises to any individuals. We're going to wait for the study. And that's simply not accurate. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that there are a number of people who got fairly substantial raises, and they don't include any EDAs. So that's why I'm here. So the department that has had Andy's department has had a 69% increase in budget in the last 5 years. That's 69%. And there are seven new positions for the public defender, and none of which I'm here to talk about. I'm not here to say you should give people more positions or not. The only argument I have made consistently is that these decisions are being made without any data process. I mean, to my knowledge, there's no statistical data that justifies any increased personnel in his department versus my department. And it's a general rule of thumb that I go by is that we prosecute every case. You understand that? We prosecute every case. And the public defender represents roughly a third of the felony caseload, and according to Mark, more like 50% of the overall caseload. I don't know. That could be. So let's say it's 50%. And then, there's this argument, well, the public defender budget has to be equal to the DA's office, and there's a disconnect there. And, the public defender's office doesn't represent all of the people in the county. We prosecute all the people in the county. So if you're going to try and do something that's statistically accurate, you'd say, well, let's say, to be generous, they represent half the people in the county, then they would receive half the budget that the DA's has. And instead, they're roughly on a par with us as far as the number of personnel that these increased positions go in. So in Andy's budget, we have, I'll go through, there's 188, a public defender gets 12% increase, 16%, 25%, 26%, 13%, 19%, 12%, 33%. These are increases in salaries, and in my office, I asked for six increases and got zero. So I put in for roughly $50,000 increases in salary, got zero. He put in for $116,000 and got $116,000. I don't get it. I don't know how you can, as a legislative body, say, well, that makes perfect sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. And again, the salaries that are being increased in public defender's office are, in my judgment, they're warranted. Those are salaries that should be in commensurate with the increases. But at the same time, the DA's office should also be commensurate with these increases. And for some reason, we are left out of the process. So that's the gist of my argument. I could talk a lot about the new bills that are creating some problems for our office and for law enforcement, and my attempts to do that. But if this is really kind of being a budget meeting, I try and keep it to the budget. I also just there's some other things that don't make sense to me. There, There are paralegals around the county that make considerably more money than my felony trial attorneys. Felony trial attorneys by definition have to go out and pay $100,000 to $120,000 student loans. I don't understand how the county can take the position that some folks can have such a disparity in salaries. So that's why I'm here.
Thanks, Holly. Just one question for you before I open up to questions in the committee. Your ADAs, are they allowed to have private practice?
No, it's a full-time position. It's funny, Nancy, you were saying that you have some people who are doing 24/7 for a week at a time. And we have the same thing. You know, we're on call 24/7. We do a rotating basis, as you do. As far as just the kind of work, you know, I was talking to Mark earlier, and I don't know how to express myself well enough, except that the folks that work over in this office, most of them have been with the county for a number of years, from two to however many years. These are really the kind of people you want in this county. They work hard. They care about what they do. They're professional. There's no clock going on over there. They work many, many hours. And when I leave the room, you can talk to the people that interact with my staff and say, well, you know, is he blowing smoke or what? I mean, this is really a good crop of people. And I think it's a poor business model to say, you know, we have an entry-level position for somebody who's never worked for the county that's going to make more money than you as a felony trial assistant. Just, you know, the goal, of course, is from their perspective, you know, I've got families, I've got kids to pay, maybe I should leave the office, and that's what I'm trying to prevent.
Thanks, Holly. questions from the committee? Lynn?
Just on the professional service side for the district attorney's office, professional service, line 4300, professional services.
I don't know yet. Go ahead. And I don't know if I know what that means.
Okay. Well, you have budgeted for professional services $300,000, which you're kind of staying flat, but it you currently...
Oh, this is the non-personnel part?
Non-personnel
okay, sorry,
part.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Okay. I was like, did I hire somebody? No, okay.
No, I'm just trying to understand your... You know, we just, you know, did a run rate, and you're not even going to hit the 300 this year. So you're currently at about 150,000. So I'm just trying to understand.
Sure.
Is there, what was budgeted there? Was there something you didn't contract out, et cetera?
I understand what you're talking about. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. You were focused on the
personnel. I was.
I get it.
So since I've been here, I've been my 12th year, we have never asked for an increase in our non-personnel budget.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give you much money back, but we have never come to you and said, I need more money.
Mm-hmm.
So when Mark Smith was here, real, real bright guy, and he said, look, I get that you can't predict exactly what's going to happen because like the professional services are things like psychiatric defense. So if we have three murder cases, psychiatric defenses, that budget line is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't, if we only have two, we'll have money left over.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, it's particularly hard to evaluate that line because that's the line where we're going to have to bring people in for labs. So right now, the state police is just saying, don't send us anything. Send it to Pennsylvania. So the first result you get from Pennsylvania is free. After that, if you need them to come to court, if you need Rosario packets, things like that, we have to pay for it. It's going to cost a crazy amount of money. And so when I come to the budget process, I said, what do you want me to do? You want me to say, I'm going to need, you know, this much money, and if I don't use it, good for me? And the response has always been from the Sixth Floor, work with me, keep your budget tight, and if it turns out that you have a double homicide and you're out of money, come to us and we'll work with you. And they always have. We've always done that. The one that you haven't asked about, which you have a right to ask about if you're paying attention, is the extradition line. People say, look, you're asking, you never use all your money in extradition. And what happens is I run a budget. And if it turns out I need to pay for some minutes and that line is gone, I transfer money from one line over. And the extradition line is the one that I choose sometimes not to bring back someone who committed a DWI that's out in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I can't afford to bring him back. And when at the end of the year, we do a lot of extradition sometimes because we have a little extra money and we go over to get people. But, you know, the fact is we make budget decisions that when I can, discretionary budget decisions. When I go to trial, I really can't make budgetary discretions. I have to say, okay, you need a doctor, you got to go get that.
So it depends on the case in which is why it can fluctuate.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And the real killer is the psychiatric defense. Hiring a doctor in a psychiatric defense costs...
The medical, if that's under the medical health line.
Well, no, in the services line, those are experts that come into court and testify.
Okay.
And boy, they...
It's good to be an expert.
Yeah, it's good to be an expert.
Okay. Thank you.
Jonathan?
For the six positions that you mentioned that you were seeking raises for in your proposal to the executive,
yes.
Can I first just confirm that all six are making, you said, between 60 and 64?
Let me I brought a little handout, but I don't know if anybody wants this thing. Give me one second.
It's in the whole budget, though.
I gave him.
Okay. So Tim is 64.5. Margot is 60,900. Nope. There are two that are 66 and 67. I asked to raise those to 74. And Jared makes 60, and Luba makes 60. So there are two positions. 1206 and 1209 they were people have been here for 6 years and I've asked those salaries to go from 67 to 75.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
If you have an extra, you can send it to us. Thanks.
No, I give it to you.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Does anybody have any other questions for Mr. Carnwright before we move on to Mr. Kossover? All right, thank you. Andy, you're on.
Okay. Let me start with what I agree with Mr. Carnwright. I agree that none of the attorneys in the county, as far as I know, are being paid commensurate with their experience. I think we're lucky to have all the professionals working for us. And as Holly said, it's due to their dedication to public service that they're willing. I think there's sort of this culture of, I expect to get paid less because I'm doing public good. And that's okay. I mean, that's just a judgment, but I agree with Holly that it would be nice for people who have been out of law school for 30 years and are doing homicide cases and doing felonies and, to be north of six figures, and they're not. But I also agree that the county executive's office and the legislature has worked with me. I agree with Holly that we're always one homicide away from blowing a budget, you know, and psychiatric expert testimony, it can cost $30,000-$40,000 for a case by the time we get done for one forensic psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. So I also agree with Holly on that, and, you know, every time there is a homicide, you know, I'm like, yeah, I open the newspaper to say, uh-oh, is this going to be one of ours or not, because it could blow our budget, and I have to come knocking for more money. However, where I disagree with Holly on a couple of things, and maybe he doesn't understand it, the raises we got recently weren't really raises. It was what we called parity, and I think I spoke to this committee about that previously. We had discrepancies within my department, never mind the county. And in some cases, there was a pattern, obviously not intentionally, I inherited this, but women were getting paid less than men. And so we did something about that. So all we did, what Holly referred to as increases, was trying to get everybody doing the same work, the same compensation. And we've now accomplished that. I had one or two female attorneys actually threatened litigation against the county. So I made it a priority to address that. We are still, and again, I want to raise all boats. I don't want to bring the district attorneys down any more than Holly wants to reduce my staff's compensation. But we are still always a little bit behind the prosecutor's office. My chief assistant is budgeted for about $99,000. Bill Weishaupt and Michael Cavanaugh Jr. are both north of $100,000. So we're behind even with our current compensation. The good news for the county legislature and the county is that all of these funding is a result of state funding. It's not costing the county anything. We have categorized all this in the Harrell Haring grant that I've explained to this committee previously. Just quickly to refresh your recollection, the New York Civil Liberties Union sued the state of New York over inadequate public defense. Governor Cuomo settled that case, and part of that settlement not only applied to the five counties that were in the initial lawsuit, it applies to all the counties outside New York City, and that's why this is actually a funded mandate as opposed. We are being told, and there was statistics done, there was studies done by the New York State Office of Indigent Legal Services. They looked at every single county's caseload, workload, and they decided Ulster County needed these new hires to meet caseload goals, criteria, standards. So this was not arbitrary, these seven new hires for this budget. This was based on statistical data and a comparison to, how many do we have, 62 other counties?
61 other counties.
61 other counties. So they compared that and said, they came to us and said, this is what we're going to provide to you so that you meet standards. By the way, I don't like the word caseload because, as Holly and I know, it isn't just how many cases. I like the word workload because a homicide case is different than a petty larceny in terms of the amount of time and effort and expense that goes into it. So clearly it should be workload, not just numbers. So you have to look at that also. These positions were essentially, with my input, were essentially mandated by the state. They're not all attorney positions. We're getting a senior typist, and that has to do with the data compliance that they are asking of us. And we are also getting a new part-time investigator. Again, not to compete with the district attorney's office, but Holly knows that, you know, he was with the public defender's office when he was elected district attorney. And since that time, my office actually lost one attorney. Frank Echt left, and we never replaced him. We absorbed that position. He went to Ulster Savings Bank full-time. And so my staff, since Holly is district attorney, I think he mentioned 12 years, my staff is down one lawyer, except for if you exclude the conflict office that we have in Dutchess County, pursuant to our agreement with Dutchess County. We have one part-time investigator. I believe the district attorney's office has several investigators. And so whether we handle 30% or 70% of the criminal cases in Ulster County, and I think it's closer to 60 or 70%, it is time, and the state recognized this, obviously, when they did their study. It's time for us to get this funding. Again, I don't think, like I said, it's not county funds, it's state funds, but I just want to put it in context, and then I'll be finished. Gideon was decided 56 years ago that created public defense for people who couldn't afford an attorney. And we've been underfunded and under-resourced ever since. We know that most elected officials are run in part on law and order. And so there's always been significant funding for the prosecutor's office and more for law enforcement than public defense. It's not a popular or sexy, you know, place to run on a campaign. And so this is our, thanks to the New York Civil Liberties Union's lawsuit and Governor Cuomo settling that suit, this is our 5 minutes in the sun. You know, for the first time, they're making up for 56 years of neglect. And so I'm very pleased about it. I'm not getting another nickel despite taking on conflict, raise the age, and all these new responsibilities. That's okay. I love my job. I subscribe to doing public service, but I just would want you to know that this is to compensate for that 56 years of neglect. And even with this money, we are still fighting to be at parity with the prosecutor's office. And I can't speak to the county attorneys because I haven't looked at that. And I'm glad that there is a study underway for all professional management, right? Yes?
I was told it was put on hold.
Oh, really?
Recently.
Oh, okay. I certainly did a lot of work on that question
there
for nothing.
Not for nothing.
Suspended, right?
It's paused. It's not.
I believe put on hold is a proper term. I think that's exactly the way it was described at Ways and Means.
Right. Well, since I've been around the county, I know that it's probably been something that there was a lot of disparity in terms of DSS lawyers and county attorneys and all that. And it would be nice to somehow, it's very difficult, I get that, to compare, you know, all the different responsibilities of the different attorneys. But anyway,
all right.
I'll shut up. That's
I've got several questions. First off, I'll ask you the same question I asked Holly. Are your assistant public defenders able to have outside practice aside from their public defender's work?
The part-time, yes. We have, just like Holly does, full-time, the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Part-time, the answer is yes. Holly also, I don't know if he may have forgot to mention, he's with the town, with the night court, town and village, it's difficult to do that with full-time help, so we both use part-time attorneys for that. So, of course, they have private practices on the side. I even have a couple of attorneys that are three-quarters time in family court, so they have a smaller side practice, but they also maintain a little bit of a side practice. But other than that, no, they are not. And if I find out about it, then there's a correction.
You had mentioned that your new positions are all grant-funded, which is something that we have been talking about. How many years are they grant-funded for?
It's 5 years at a time, but because it's a lawsuit settlement, the funds from the state are supposed to be sacred. The executive office said that it's in perpetuity, essentially, because of the settlement. But everyone I'm hiring, I advise that it is conditioned, your position is conditioned on the grant money continuing. So they know that going in.
Okay.
Why we have the Harold Herring division.
I understand. Okay. I want to point that out because, you know, as Mr. Peterson will tell you, we're supposed to get tens of millions of dollars from the surcharge on 911 that we don't receive, which is why we're about to have a huge deal on a countywide radio system. That was supposed to be sacred, too. The last question I have is that you said the new hires, you know, it wasn't like you pulled them out of thin air. There was a method to your madness on those. Were the salaries also part of the mandate down from the state on how this was going to be allocated, or was that an internal decision made between your office and the budget office?
Excellent question. That was sort of negotiated between my office and the budget office.
Okay.
I asked for
new
a
salary?
Yes.
Salary
the $64,000 and the $68,000.
Right. All those were negotiated.
Okay.
I asked for a little bit more than that for full time, but the finance department did what the fire, and I guess the sixth floor does what it does, and I didn't get everything I asked for, but we're blessed. I can't take credit for me, but my colleagues in Dutchess and Orange and Columbia and Greene counties are all telling me they can't find personnel. I've experienced applicants, candidates. I've experienced that in the past, but right now we're blessed. I have an embarrassment of riches. I don't know if it's because New York City people want to move to Ulster County or what, but I'm getting some awesome attorneys applying for these positions. I'm happy.
Just to move back to the budget, first Lynn and then Heidi.
And of those seven, you have you're going to hire them all at the beginning of the year, or their agreement to hire throughout the year?
There's some that are half year.
There's five, right. There's five positions. There's five positions in January, two of which, one's the typist, the senior, and one's an investigator. So there's only three attorney positions. There's two new attorney positions in July, And finally, a town and village assistant public defender, October 1st.
Legislator Haynes?
Thank you.
Who's going to be which position will be satisfying the data officer position?
That person exists right now. She started on yesterday. She started on Tuesday because of the holiday.
Is this
we
a new
lost,
hire or was this internal?
It's our grant specialist. So we have a grant specialist in house because we are so grant funded at this point. And that person is also going to be, because she will be dealing with the numbers and the data and the caseload, because this is all caseload driven. It made the most sense to designate her as the data compliance officer, and she will be going to Albany for training by the New York State Office of Indigent Legal Services next week, along with another member of my office. So
is there a salary increase to that position?
No.
Okay, so she was...
It was newly created in 19, though. So
yeah,
it wasn't fully
it's a new
full year funded in 19.
Yeah.
It was funded, I think, for half a year in 19, and then fully funded for 20.
We lost the initial hire, Christopher Glancy, got stolen by Dutchess County Business Development for their grants and stuff. So he was great, but he left on very good terms. And he left, you know, to his credit, he left our new hire an amazing amount of memos, contact sheets, everything she needs to do.
So that position isn't part of the seven new positions?
No, it's not.
Okay,
no.
So seven.
We actually had a separate data compliance officer, and we eliminated that, thinking, why that would be excess. Let's just designate the existing position as the data compliance officer. And the reason for that, everybody, is because, as Holly is very strong on, they want to make sure that they're comparing apples to apples every county. They want everyone to count cases the same. For example, a family court case can have six petitions, you know, custody, neglect, abuse, all that. And is that one case? You know, every county was counting different. Or is that five cases? So they're teaching them how to define cases and how to count them so that the statistics will be true.
Does anybody have any further questions for the public defender?
I do.
I don't want to get into a back and forth, Holly. I feel like you've both said your piece, and I think that we're going to take it all under advisement.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move to the sheriff. Sheriff, you're on.
Good evening, everyone. That's a lot of lawyer talk, wasn't it? Let's talk about those in the trenches.
The ahead of the time talk, you know, before it gets to those two.
As you know, we are a 24/7 operation. We're the ones that bring the majority of the clients to both of the previous talkers. Some of the things that we requested and we did not get, for example, we lost 9 cars last year. We requested to get 10, and we're going to get 5, which is the usual that we get every year. We did get an increase of 2 deputies, and of course, that's going to be worked into our Oracle project and program. And as you know, it takes about 90 days to train new deputies, so before we can even put the new folks that are going to be more of the senior side of the house, we have to get those new deputies trained. We got an uptick of over 5,000 calls here in Ulster County for basically the last several years. We share assets with our local law enforcement brothers, from Worcester Hostage Negotiation, Underwater Rescue, Drone and Marine Navigation. And of course, Oracle would also be a shared asset because we expect the towns to join forces with us when there are overdoses in their townships, but those that have full-time positions, full-time police departments, and a lot of them have already started doing that. Just last month alone, we had 10 suspected fatalities and overdoses not confirmed yet by toxicology reports. Last year, we had 4. So this epidemic continues. And that's why it's so important that we do something about it. And that's why the county executive, as well as myself, have pushed very hard to get these two individuals added to the sheriff's office. And that's really going to mean their goals. Some of the other things that we asked on capital projects and we didn't get was Black Creek. Black Creek is the main program that runs all the security systems at the county jail. That is the camera systems, the doors, the touch-based system. Mm-hmm. It's the entire security system, and it's going to have to get updated at some point. So obviously that's not going to happen next year because it was taken out. And for the most part, we're looking at the potential of Greene County. They get a new sheriff, and they're coming back. We suspect that we're going to get some of those folks back. Of course, bail reform is going to be looked at next year, and there'll be adjustments along the way. We're also looking at putting motion detectors in a lot of the rooms in the jail to kind of offset some of the costs the high cost of our electric bill there at the Ulster County Law Enforcement Center. We do get grants, but we can do better. We don't have any grant writers, but we're working on that. And I fully intend to have a grant writer to look out to offset some of the costs for the taxpayers. We're also getting $50,000 from OASIS for a medical assisted treatment program that's also part of Oracle. And so those are some of the things that we're looking to do. And that's mainly the main thing of the two folks that we're getting added, which is huge for us.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions to begin with? Grace?
Just a quick one. You mentioned the cars. You have, what if you lose the cars too?
We had several accidents, and we also have an old fleet. These are cars that were just put out of commission.
Were they all marked vehicles?
Some. I think the majority of them were marked.
Yeah. Seven of the nine were marked.
How many? Seven.
Seven of the nine.
Seven were marked.
We're about to replace one, or partially replace one through insurance, so.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you didn't replace the other one.
I understand. No, I get it. I'm not, I'm not contradicting what the sheriff said. Believe me. I've always been a proponent of a well-running fleet of police cars and lower mileage, because when people think about mileage on their personal car, it's not the same when you're doing 90 miles an hour around turns and around cars, and so I get that.
A safety issue and a liability issue. Mm-hmm. For the county.
Hopefully you're not doing 90 miles an hour around turns very often.
Well, you hope not, but then again, if somebody's got a gun to your head, you hope they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other questions for the sheriff? Okay. That was less than I thought. All right. Last but certainly not least, we have Steve Peterson from the Office of Emergency Management and Emergency Communications.
Thank you very much. We have three divisions: the Emergency Communications, the Emergency Management, the Fire Coordinator, and Fire Investigation. We have asked for a total of four positions, one full-time, one part-time, and two less than half-time positions. The full-time position was included. That is an emergency full-time emergency manager for the county. That would be a grant-funded position, 80% grant-funded position. The part-time position we had asked for was a training coordinator for the Public Safety Training Center. That's being built right now, and then two fire instructors, which are less than half-time. we have several grant programs that we do receive funding for. One in particular is the Interoperable and Emergency Communications Grant Funding. That is your 911 surcharge money that's coming back in two different forms of grants: a formula grant and a targeted grant program. Formula grant: every county within the state gets funding, and they're to build out their systems, their interoperable systems. The targeted grant is more specific to the capabilities of the county. So we submit an application, we submit the data that the county currently has, the capabilities that the county has. It gets reviewed by the state, and then funding gets allocated through the targeted grant. And that's your 911 surcharge funding. We are in line to get a significant grant for that, which would be for the upgrade to the public safety radio communications capital project 482. But that hasn't been announced yet. We expect that's coming. Basically, that's about it for us.
Heidi first? That's right.
Yes. How much is that?
Which one?
The one you're expecting for...
It's currently budgeted. The budget is set for $6 million.
Lynn?
With the addition of staff, are you going to see a decrease in your overtime expenses? Because I see a trend upward every year on the overtime.
And right.
I was just curious with these new additions, because it's not in, it, I mean, it's projected to go up here as well. So,
right.
Trying to understand if you're getting four new positions, why overtime still goes up.
Yep. The overtime is specifically for the dispatch staff. The new position is an emergency manager, which is not a dispatcher. We haven't been able to keep a full staff of dispatchers for like the last 4 years. We've always been running two, sometimes three short. So we have minimum staffing during the day, or all 24 hours. So we have to backfill that with overtime while we train other employees. And sometimes it takes 6 months to 8 months to train a new employee.
So is your hope that will go down?
Yep. Currently, I've got
as you're creating a backstop for experienced folks that can step in your department.
Right. Right. Right now I've got two dispatchers in training.
Uh-huh.
One will be cut loose in 2 weeks, and then the other will be cut loose to work on a shift after the first of the year. So then we should be at full staff. So that overtime should start to smooth out.
So you don't anticipate spending the full amount this coming year? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm hoping.
Okay.
If I could just jump in on that, it's a great thought, but overtime has been a significant problem there for a long time because I think that they're overstaffed, and this committee actually took a tour.
Understaffed.
Thank
you.
Understaffed. By at least one or two dispatchers, based on our tour, this committee did a tour of the, and I encourage you to go there because anybody who wasn't there, I encourage to go to the tour because it's, I think it's eye-opening.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. It's eye-opening that all of the emergency dispatch for the county is done in this building,
uh-huh.
Let alone with the staff that's there. And one thing that Steve had pointed out several times while we were there as they were fielding 911 calls is that the supervisor, who's just supposed to be overseeing everybody, is having to take calls.
He's a working supervisor,
and that becomes a problem because there's certain calls when a supervisor is going to be necessary, and if he's on that call, he can't assist with the call that he's needed on. It was a discussion that we were having as a committee about whether or not we should, recommend to the legislature that another dispatcher, emergency services dispatcher, be added to the budget, which could alleviate long-term overtime problems because.
Right.
While he's going to be fully staffed now when these folks are cut loose into their full time positions, we lose a lot of dispatchers to surrounding counties. So when one of those goes out, it takes again the whole training period to come to full staff, which is why I don't think he can predict whether or not he's going to need his whole overtime budget or not.
I believe when we did that tour, supervisor at the time was not only in his role, but I believe he was doing all KFT dispatching.
He was doing every bit of KFT,
which is the entire city of Kingston.
That's a normal assignment, to run the shift as well as dispatch for Kingston.
Are you losing them as a result of salary, or are they going for full-time positions because you've got them as part-time?
Salary.
Salary.
Tracy?
Can I just ask a question? The detail on the other equipment line, the 2300 line, that's 542,000.
Yep, that has to do with the training.
That's equipment
center.
For the training.
Yeah.
Center. Okay. Thank you.
Mark.
Capital
budget. I mean, so this is an operating budget, but there is, you know, we're in talks with the sheriff to move the operations of emergency services potentially to the civil side of the jail, not the rotunda, but where
our safety... Is that part
of the
$3 million move?
It's part of that $3 million. A standalone $3 million. It's not part
of
the various... Yes, it's its own capital project.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and part of it involves some of this grant money. I think we came in and talked to...
Public Works.
And discussed how we're looking to upgrade the consoles, but we don't want to do that in the old facility. We want to do that in the new facility.
And that would be typical practice to have them together, correct?
Right. It should have happened when they built the jail, but it didn't, and we'll just leave it at that.
For example, the other thing that we asked about, since we're talking about it, when they built that building, they didn't build a garage. So all our assets are all over the place, and fire departments.
Which came up in a different tour.
Wherever we can bank for it. And actually, we just came up with something. But yeah, I mean, that's
having communications all in the same room, the same floor, you know, same format, same building is huge for the county. It's a step up from where we are currently now. Two separate locations doing somewhat of the same job, but a lot of communications on big incidents.
Yeah.
Having everybody together is
operational. Are you able to leverage the resources by combining it as well, or do you still have to keep it distinct?
No, we can leverage resources. In fact, this proposal that I have for the upgrade of the system includes console equipment and phone equipment for all of the positions to run everything. Right,
including
the sheriff's office.
Oh, okay. Right, so they'll get an upgrade as well, and it'll be combined, and then you'll have additional resources to.
Well, which could leverage some of the problems that we saw at the tour of the jail when the sheriff talked about the need for extra dispatching.
Right.
So.
Right. Thank you. Okay.
It also puts our regular operations 50 feet as opposed to two separate locations from our emergency operations center, which is in the basement of the jail on the other side, on the rotunda side, but having to just walk outside and back in as opposed to jump in your car and drive. When we get into those situations, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I agree.
And Steve, were you finished with your presentation?
I was.
Jumped in?
I was good.
I just want to make sure.
Absolutely, it's one big time.
Does anybody, Heidi?
I want to go back to Holly just real quick.
All right, when we're finished.
Okay.
Does anybody have any further questions for Steve? All right, back to Holly very briefly, because then we've got to get through resolutions and everyone's got to get to a public hearing.
Andy brought up a point regarding pay parity. With the positions that you're asking for, the salary, is there pay parity with that? Are there men versus women making the equal salaries for that as well?
Right. I don't know of any disparity between male, female. I'd say about half of my ADAs are female.
I mean, out of the positions that you were asking for salary increases in.
Right. So generally speaking, you know, we have a county line, a budget line.
That was just what Andy used to justify his salary increases, and I was just making sure that if we're gonna use that, then let's make it across the board.
No, I don't think that I certainly have never recognized that this lawyer is... This lady's getting less than the guy doing the same thing.
But the public defender's office did?
Yeah, I mean, I will say when he brought up parity, that was a small part of it. What he really meant is people doing felony court, you know, get paid the same as doing felony cases. Somebody in a town court. So we...
Well, I understand that as well, but
okay,
he specifically...
So that I do have a problem with.
He specifically said... He specifically said raising women's salary to match a man's salary.
Well, maybe we'd like to have the public defender come up with the situations that he was speaking about. Lynn? Okay.
I would also say that's all the equity issue. That's an equity issue.
Yes, equity.
And that was part of the discussion when we're looking at doing the salary study, that that was part of the analysis that would be required to be done within that salary study, correct?
Yes.
So parity is one thing. Parity on the level of comparable work, comparable pay, equity, are women and men and race, is there equity across the board? So
I took your question as equity. And I could go back and look, but I don't think there's an issue in my office about that. I think we're pretty good on that. The parity issue is a huge issue. I mean, that's, as I said, Tim was down, if you looked in the paper, he was the guy in the hazmat suit at the last homicide. You know, he's an entry-level salary position. He's doing murder cases. And we're going to lose him. That's the bottom line.
I mean, and just to bookmark the parity issue, I mean, many of the ADAs that Holly was talking about asking for increases to bring them up, to what's less of an entry-level salary and more of what you would expect after several years with the DA's office, are currently making less than the $64,000 position, the $68,000 position that are being added as part of the Hurl-Herron. That was why I asked the question about whether or not the salaries were mandated, because there might be some discussion among the legislature about, the parity, because this is felony cases and felony cases. And I actually had Amber and Natalie ask the public defender's office why the difference between the two new positions, why is one at 64 and one at 68, and I was told that the $68,000 position was going to be doing more intense felony cases. So we have the DA here talking to us about how he's got someone at an entry-level position, trying murder cases. I think it's definitely something that we need to, as a committee and as a legislature, talk about. Lynn? And then Tracy.
Was that also addressed in the study to differentiate between the positions?
The study was
and degree of complexity of the job, correct?
The answer that was given,
I pressed the pause button.
Yeah, it's on pause.
It has been put on pause.
Not hold. Apparently that's not on hold anymore. It's on pause now.
I just...
So when Lynn speaks of the study...
It could be. It could be on pause forever, too.
It's just on pause right now?
Yes.
It's out of the
executive office. There is multiple phases for that study.
Where is it?
It's out of the executive
personnel department.
Oh, it's coming out of
the... We're still pushing, because we think this is an important study.
Yeah.
But we also didn't want to drop it in the lap of the legislature during
budget
time.
Yeah, it didn't make sense.
So we were at a phase where all of the management staff had filled out the forms, and except for one, again, elected official's office abstained. So they had all filled out the forms, and then it was supposed to go to phase two, which is supervisory review. We just put it on hold. So we're not saying it's not coming back.
I understand. Are there any other budget questions? Because we should really move on to resolutions. If
I had a question. I can ask Holly another time.
Okay. All right.
I'll follow up with you.
Okay.
Separately.
That's great.
Thank you. So thank you. Oh, to Holly. You're good.
I can peace out.
You don't have any resolutions, right? No.
I don't think so.
No. Okay.
I resolve to.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you.
I couldn't hold that.
Resolution 454. Authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services for the GIVE Initiative, Department of Probation.
Move.
Moved by Heppner, second.
Second.
By Haynes. Discussion, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 455. Authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services for the Local Emergency Management Performance Grant for the federal fiscal year 2019 and amending the 2019 Ulster County budget.
Moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Questions?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 456, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with the Division of Homeland Security, Hazardous Materials Emergency Preparedness Grant Program.
Move.
Move. Second. Second it. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 457, approving the MOA between the County of Ulster and the Ulster County Sheriff's Association for 2019.
Move.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 458, approving the MOA between the County of Ulster and the Deputy Sheriff's Police Benevolent Association on behalf of the Superior Officers Unit for the years of 2018 and 2019.
Moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 459, authorizing the Chair of the Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with various municipalities for the operation of Urgent.
Move.
Second.
On the resolution, Chairman Butchers.
So I was going to ask if we could, hopefully it's friendly, if we could hold this for a month. I spoke with the sheriff.
Well, I was going to suggest, so well done.
Thank you.
Excellent.
I spoke with the sheriff about it, and we're working on a potential couple changes, and we'll expedite it through to make sure it's the next month.
At that, I'll entertain a motion to postpone for a month.
Move to postpone.
I second that.
On the postponement? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 460, appropriating funds from self-insurance revenues for the replacement of a sheriff's office urgent vehicle purchased from forfeiture and amending the 2019 Ulster County budget.
Moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Any questions? It's a 2014 Ford F-150, lost in an accident, and we have the recovery line. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 474, which is approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with NICOMCO.
Moved.
Second.
This is radio equipment for the Corrections Division through October 31st, 2020. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The monthly financial reports for September and October are in the OneDrive. Our next meeting is December 2nd. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we all adjourn to, well, those of us who are going to Woodstock?
Beautiful Woodstock.
Sorry. I was moving fast. Please don't leave without signing the sheets. With that in mind, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make that motion.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?